when we decide to blow the whistle, spill the beans, take a rain check, or get the hell out of Dodge, we're using analogies whose original meanings rarely enter our consciousness. But beneath their surface, analogies convey a complex network of ideas that shape not just our thinking, but also our behavior. That's why a mere turn of phrase can have a major impact on the turn of events, and why the world's most influential and innovative leaders use analogies to their great advantage. In the new book, Shortcut: How Analogies Reveal Connections, Spark Innovation, and Sell Our Greatest Ideas, former presidential speechwriter John Pollock reveals just how pervasive analogies really are and how powerful. And it's a great pleasure to welcome John Pollock to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe.
I'm curious as to how you come to this as an idea.
I actually came to the idea of writing a book about analogy when I was working on a book on the history of puns called The Pun Also Rises, and I read an article on the role of analogy in creativity, and I thought, wow, that's really, really interesting, and I Xeroxed the article, set it aside, and came back to it later.
So how do you ultimately define an analogy?
There are a lot of definitions, but probably the most useful one is to think of an analogy as a comparison between two things that suggests parallels between them, either explicit or implicit. So, for example, the controversy surrounding the Ray Rice video, people saw that and said, hey, that's just the tip of the iceberg of domestic violence in the NFL. And instantly people know what that means, even though icebergs and domestic violence have nothing in common intrinsically, except in this case, it's an apt description.
So is that turn of phrase of an analogy is also something, I mean, you were talking about a pun, but it can be something that is well used, or it can be something that is created on the spot that makes that analogy and has you compare the two.
Exactly. And in many ways, you've got cliches, which are often desiccated analogies that have been used so many times that people don't even think of the original meaning, such as he's opening a Pandora's box. And then you've got new analogies, often at the spur of the moment. Take, for example, General Hayden, the former CIA director, listened to the president's speech and said that the reliance on air power in Syria has all the attraction of casual sex. It seems to offer gratification, but with very little commitment. Now, that analogy got him into a lot of trouble for good reason, because it's not a very good analogy.
You have to give him credit for not using a cliche, right? I mean, you wrote for President Clinton. You would not say tip of the iceberg. That would be something I would assume, as a speechwriter, you would want to avoid.
You are absolutely correct. The art of analogy is describing something in a way that is fresh and provides new insight, but be careful what you choose as your analogy, because you can really step in it. For example, think back a few years to the 2012 presidential race, and the aide to Mitt Romney, when asked about how Romney was going to swing to the middle again after a primary against opponents further to the right, he said, well, it's like an etch-a-sketch. We'll just shake it and reset. And, of course, that may have been an apt description, but it was very, very damaging to Romney, because it suggested that he had no fixed positions. Whatever you shook, you know, you could make them disappear.
Right. And do you think that most of these are things that come to our mind, or are more crafted than that, when we come up with a bad analogy, especially?
It depends on the circumstance. The most interesting thing about analogy, once you start to pay attention, is how common it is. And what people don't realize is that we're constantly making decisions in our daily life based on comparisons to past situations, analogies. And so when we cross the street, for example, in a strange city, we make that decision based on all the thousands of times we've crossed a street before. And so this idea of analogy as only being a turn of phrase is a little bit misleading. Those are perhaps the most memorable, but it's really central to the way we think and we act in the world, and analogies can take a lot of different forms.
So if we hear the words, in other words, or it's kind of like, we know we're getting ready for an analogy.
Generally speaking, that's correct, especially it's like, you know, listen up because you're about to hear an analogy. And some people say, hey, what's the difference between metaphor and simile and analogy? And I say, well, metaphor and simile are types of analogy, just like a Macintosh and a Fuji and a Granny Smith are types of apple. Unless you're being very specific about baking an apple pie, just think of them as apples, and that's good enough. Just think of these as different types of an analogy, and that's good enough.
You talk about in the book some of the most powerful analogies in history that have really changed us. Give us an example of a powerful analogy.
Okay, so you know there are positive examples and negative examples. So let's take a negative example first. In 1954, a reporter asked President Eisenhower why Indochina was important to the United States, and he said, "Well, it's like a row of dominoes. You set them up, and you push the first one over, and the rest topple one by one." And that gave birth to the domino theory, which led us eventually into an escalating war in Vietnam to stop dominoes from toppling before a communist onslaught. Now, of course, it was a very easy and succinct and persuasive analogy. It just happened to be wrong, because when we lost the Vietnam War, the neighboring countries didn't topple like dominoes. And so that was a very seductive analogy. It was wrong. Now, on the positive side, take, for example, the computer desktop. When Steve Jobs introduced that concept in 1984 with the Mac, very few people could use a computer. But by saying, hey, it's just like using a desktop, and you know how to do that, he enabled millions and millions of people to start using computers, which unlocked the talents and creativity of the world and ushered in the information age. So analogies can be very catalytic in our decision-making, negative and positive. So it's important to pay attention to those you hear.
You write about the five essential criteria of the effective analogy, that criteria including?
Yes, the five criteria of effective analogy. Number one, use the familiar to explain something less familiar. Two, effective analogies highlight similarities and obscure differences. Three, an effective analogy identifies useful abstractions. So in the example of the computer desktop, it's this idea that you're dealing with a desktop, even though you really it's completely different from the traditional physical desktop.
Right.
The fourth criteria is tell a coherent story. And the fifth criteria, an effective analogy should resonate emotionally. It should feel emotionally satisfying.
The interesting point that you make in the book is that these aren't just used for creative writing or to get a special message across, that we use these to, as the subtitle suggests, to sell our greatest ideas. For marketing purposes, you mentioned Steve Jobs a moment ago, to be able to take a brand new idea and to sell it to us, whether that be a product or a political thought, that it's a way of using words to get us thinking about something in a new way.
Exactly. And you see it play an important role in kind of capturing the essence of an idea and also revealing new ideas. For example, in Iowa recently, Joni Ernst, the Republican candidate for Senate, ran an ad saying that she was ready to go to Washington because she grew up on a farm castrating hogs. Now, it's a really funny and appealing analogy, but if you examine it, really, what similarities are there between negotiating in the Senate and castrating hogs? In the Senate, it's all about compromise, and I can guarantee you, if you were negotiating with the hog, it wouldn't agree to have one testicle cut.
So who in the room raises their hand and says, you know, I think that may be a bad idea?
Well, I think that we hear analogies all the time. Sometimes we don't even notice them. Sometimes we notice them and accept them. And it's like a fish biting a baited hook. You've got to be careful what you're biting at and what you're swallowing, because you could get hooked in a bad way. So it's always a good idea to question the analogies you encounter. You know, what differences are relevant? Somebody's making a point about similarity. You need to ask, what are the differences that are relevant? And also, how are my emotions playing into this? And what other analogies might be relevant that might be a better fit? Because there's always a number of analogies that could apply to any given situation. So as we try to make smarter decisions, we just need to think critically about the analogies we encounter.
Would President Clinton ever question an analogy that you had written?
I don't recall him questioning analogies specifically, although I do remember a lot of ink on my rough drafts.
So, I mean, that he's a good example of someone who isn't going to just take what is written. He will look at it and see how it works for him.
Exactly. Now, ideally, as a speechwriter, as you become more accustomed to writing for a given principle, you have an idea of the rhythms of how they speak and the turns of phrase that they tend to use, and you can put that to work, and so you get closer each time, ideally, to a draft that rings true right from the get-go.
It's a fascinating book. It is entitled Shortcut: How Analogies Reveal Connections, Spark Innovation, and Sell Our Greatest Ideas. It is published by Gotham Books. John Pollack, a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Shortcut: How Analogies Reveal Connections, Spark Innovations, and Sell Our Greatest Ideas. It is published by Gotham. John Pollack is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.